Chapter 53, The Feast of Lights. The people dancing in the streets of Kyrian exasperated Perrin. Making a way through was near to impossible. A line dance snaked past him behind a big-nosed fellow with a flute and no shirt. Last in line pranced a round little woman who laughed merrily and took a hand from the waist of the man in front of her to try pulling Perrin in behind. He shook his head, and either his yellow eyes frightened her, or his face looked as grim as he felt, because she swallowed her mirth and let the line lead her on, glancing back over her shoulder at him until the crowd hid her. A graying woman, still handsome, with slashes of color halfway to the waist of her dark silk dress, flung slender arms around Perrin's neck and stretched up her mouth hungrily toward his. She looked startled when he picked her up gently under the arms and set her down out of his way. A group of men and women his own age, capering to timbres, bumped into him, laughing gaily and plucking at his coat. They ignored his head-shaking until finally he pushed one of the men away hard and snarled a lead-wolf growl at the others. Laughter vanished in gaping astonishment for a moment, but they were roaring again and trying to imitate his growl before they frolicked away into the throng. It was the first day of the Feast of Lights, the shortest day of the year, the last day of the year, and the city celebrated in ways Perrin could never have imagined. There would be dancing in the two rivers, but this... The Kyrianen seemed determined to make up for a year of staid reserve in the 2 days of the feast. Propriety had gone down the well, and with it every barrier between common and noble, in public at least. Perspiring women in plain rough wool seized sweaty men in color-striped dark silks and pulled them into the dance. Men in carter's coats and stablemen's vests whirled women whose dresses bore slashes of color sometimes to the waist. Bare-chested men poured wine over themselves and anyone else close to them. Apparently any man could kiss any woman kiss any man, and they were doing so with great abandon everywhere Perrin looked. He tried not to look too closely. Some of the noble women, with their hair in elaborate towers of curls, were bare to the waist beneath light cloaks that they made little effort to keep closed. Among the commoners, few women who had abandoned their blouses bothered with any sort of covering beyond their hair, and that seldom near long enough. They flung wine over themselves and everyone else as wildly as any man. Boisterous laughter, warred with a thousand different tunes from flutes and drums and horns, zithers and bitterns and dulcimers. The women's circle in Emmons Field would have had a screaming fit, and the village council swallowed their tongues in apoplexy, but the depraved goings-on were only a small burr added to Perrin's irritation. A few hours, Nandera had said, but Rand had been gone 6 days now. Min had either gone with him or was staying with the Aiel, and no one seemed to know anything. Except for the one called Sorlea, the wise ones were evasive as any Aes Sedai when Perrin managed to corner one. Sorlea told him bluntly to tend to his wife and keep his nose out of affairs that did not concern wetlanders. How Sorlea knew of the trouble between Fael and him he had no idea, but he did not care. He could feel Rand's need like an itch everywhere under his skin, stronger every day. He was coming from Rand's school now, a last resort, but everyone there was as caught in drink, dance, and debauchery as the rest of Kyrian. A woman named Idrian had been named to him as the head of the school, but after he managed, with some difficulty and no small embarrassment, to interrupt her kissing a man young enough to be her son, long enough to ask his question, all she could say was that maybe a man named Fel might know something. And Fel turned out to be dancing with three young women who could have been his granddaughters. With all three at once. Fel hardly seemed able to remember his own name, perhaps not surprising in the circumstances. Burn Rand. He had gone off without a word when he knew about Min's viewing, knew he was going to need Perrin desperately. Even the Aes Sedai had grown disgusted, apparently. Just that morning, Perrin had learned that they were 3 days on their way back to Tar Valon, having said there was no further point in remaining. What was Rand up to? That itch had Perrin wanting to bite something. When he reached the Sun Palace, every lamp was lit and candles burned everywhere one could be placed. The corridors glittered like gems in the sun. In the Two Rivers, too, every house would be illuminated, with every available lamp and candle, until sunrise the day after tomorrow. Most of the palace servants were out in the streets, and the few who remained seemed to laugh and dance and sing as much as work. Even here some women were bare to the waist, girls barely old enough to have their hair braided in the two rivers, and gray-haired grandmothers. The Aiel in the corridors looked disgusted when they noticed, which in truth they did not seem to do very often. The maidens in particular appeared furious, though Perrin suspected that had nothing to do with Kyrianan women exposing themselves. The maidens had been more and more cats lashing their tails every day since Rand went. Perrin strode through the hallways openly for a change. He almost wanted Berylaine to pounce on him. The image that flashed in his mind was of him seizing the scruff of her neck in his teeth and shaking her until she was ready to run away with her tail curled under. Perhaps fortunately he reached his rooms without seeing a hair of her. Fael almost looked up from the stones board when he entered. Perrin was sure she did. The scent of jealousy still wafted from her, but it was not the strongest. Anger was sharper, if not at its worst, and most powerful was a flat, dull odor he identified as disappointment. Why was she disappointed in him? Why would she not speak to him? One word, even hinting at everything returning to how it had been, and he would be on his knees to accept blame for anything she wanted to pile on his head. But she only placed a black stone and murmured, "It is your turn, Loyal." "Loyal?" Loyal's ears were twitching uneasily and his long eyebrows drooped. The Ogier might have no sense of smell to speak of, well, no better than Fael, say, but he could sense mood where no human would see anything. When Perrin and Fael were in the same room, Loyal looked as though he wanted to cry. Now he just sighed like wind blowing through a cavern and put a white stone where he would begin trapping a large part of Fael's stones if she did not notice. She probably would. She and Loyal were evenly matched, far better players than Perrin. Sulin came to the bedchamber door with a pillow in her arms, frowning at Fael and at Perrin. Her scent reminded Perrin of a she-wolf who had taken about all of Cub's nipping her tail in play that she could stand. She also smelled worried. And afraid, oddly. Though why a white-haired serving woman smelling afraid should be odd, even one with Sulin's scarred, leathery face, Perrin did not understand. Scooping up a book with a leather cover worked in gilt, Perrin sank into a chair and flung the volume open. Yet he did not read or even see the book well enough to know which one he had picked up. He inhaled deeply, filtering out everything but Fael. Disappointment, anger, jealousy, and underneath that, underneath even the faint, fresh herbal smell of her soap, was her. Perrin breathed her in hungrily. One word, that was all she had to say. When a knock sounded at the door, Sulin stalked out of the bedroom, flouncing her red and white skirts and glaring at Perrin and Fael and Loyal, as if wondering why one of them had not answered it. She sneered quite openly when she saw Dobrain. She seemed to do that quite often since Rand left, but then took a deep breath as if steeling herself and visibly forced an almost cringing mildness. Her deep curtsy might have done to greet a king who enjoyed being his own headsman, and there she remained, her face nearly on the floor. Suddenly she began trembling. The smell of her anger melted, and even the worry was overwhelmed by a scent like thousands of hair-fine, needle-sharp splinters. Perrin had smelled shame from her before, but this time he would have said she might die from it. He smelled the bitter sweetness women gave off when they wept from emotion. Of course, Dobrain never even glanced at her. Instead, his deep-set eyes studied Perrin, his face sober, even somber, below his shaved and powdered forehead. Dobrain did not smell of drink even faintly, and he hardly looked as if he had been dancing. The one time Perrin had met him before, he had thought the man smelled wary. Not afraid, but as though he was padding through tangled woods full of poisonous snakes. That smell was 10 times stronger today. "Grace favor you, Lord Ebarra," Dobrain said, inclining his head. "May I speak with you alone?" Perrin set the book on the floor beside his chair and motioned to one opposite him. "The light shine on you, Lord Dobrain." If the man wanted to be formal, Perrin could be formal, but there were limits. "Whatever you have to say, my wife can hear. I keep no secrets from her. And Loyal is my friend." He could feel Fael's gaze on him. The sudden scent of her nearly overpowered him. For some reason, he associated that with her loving him. When she was at her tenderest, or when her kisses were fiercest, that aroma almost overwhelmed him. He thought about telling Dobrin to go, and Loyal and Sulin, too. If Fael smelled that way, surely he could make it all right somehow. But the Kyrian was already sitting. "A man who has a wife he can trust, Lord Ibarra, is favored of grace beyond wealth." Still, Dobrin eyed her for a moment before going on. "Today, Kyrian has suffered two misfortunes. This morning, Lord Maringill was found dead in his bed, of poison, it appears. And only a short while later, High Lord Mylan apparently fell victim to a footpad's blades in the streets. Most unusual during the Feast of Lights." "Why are you telling me this?" Perrin said slowly. Dobrin spread his hands. "You are the Lord Dragon's friend, and he is not here." He hesitated, and when he went on, it seemed he was forcing words. "Last night, Kolaver dined with guests from a number of the smaller houses. Dagonred, Juliandred, Annalyn, Ossielen, others. Small by themselves, but numerous. The subject was alliance with House Sagon, and support for Kolaver for the Sun Throne. She made little effort to hide the meeting." Again he paused, weighing Perrin with his eyes. Whatever Dobrin saw, he seemed to think it called for more explanation. "This is most strange, because both Maringill and Mylan wanted the throne, and either would have had her smothered with her own pillows had they learned of it." At last Perrin understood, though not why the man needed to beat around the bush so. He wished Fael would speak up. She was so much better at this sort of thing than he. From the corner of his eye he could see her, head bent over the stones board and watching him from the corner of her eye. "If you think Kolaver committed a crime, Lord Dobrin, you should go to Ruark." He had been going to say Berylane, but even so, the threat of jealousy increased slightly in Fael's scent.
"The Aiel savage," Dobrin snorted. "Better to go to Berylane, and that not much. I admit the Mayenner wench knows how to order a city, but she thinks every day is the Feast of Lights. Kolaver will have her sliced and cooked with peppers. You are the Dragon Reborn's friend. Kolaver..."
This time he stopped because he finally realized that Berylane had entered the room without knocking. Something long and narrow and wrapped in a blanket, cradled in her arms. Perrin had heard the door latch click, and at the sight of her, with half her bosom exposed, fury almost washed everything else out of his head. The woman came here to carry on her flirting in front of his wife? Rage drove him to his feet, and his hands slapped together with a thunder crack.
"Out! Out, woman! Out now, or I will throw you out, and I will throw you so far you bounce twice!"
Berylane gave a start at his first shout, then dropped her burden and took a wide-eyed step back, although she did not leave. By the last word, Perrin realized that everyone was looking at him. Dobrin's face appeared impassive, but his scent was all astonishment, like one tall stone spike in the middle of a flat plain. Loyal's ears were as stiffly erect as that spike, and his jaw on his chest. And Fael, wearing that cool smile, Perrin did not understand at all. He expected the waves of jealousy, with Berylane right there in the room, but why did she smell just as strongly of hurt? Suddenly Perrin saw what Berylane had dropped. The blanket had fallen away to reveal Rand's sword and the belt with the dragon buckle. Would Rand have left that behind? Perrin liked to think things through. When you were hasty, you could hurt people without meaning to. But that sword lying there was like a strike of lightning. past was foolish and sloppy in forge work, but Perrin's hackles rose and a growl rumbled deep in his throat.
"They have taken him!"
Suelin wailed suddenly, shockingly. Head thrown back, eyes squeezed shut, she moaned at the ceiling, and the sound of her voice was enough to make Perrin shiver.
"The Aes Sedai have taken my first brother!"
Her cheeks glistened with tears. "Be calm, good woman," Berlaine said firmly. "Go into the next room and be calm." To Perrin and Dobrain she added, "We cannot allow her to spread word."
"You do not recognize me," Suelin broke in savagely, "wearing this dress and with my hair grown longer. Speak of me again as though I am not here, and I will give you what I hear Ruark gave you in the Stone of Tyr, and should have since."
Perrin exchanged confused glances with Dobrain and Loyal, even with Fael before her eyes jerked away. Berlaine, on the other hand, went pale and crimson by turns. Her scent was pure mortification, shriveled and small. Striding to the door, Suelin had flung it open before anyone could move. Dobrain at least started to, but a yellow-haired young maiden passing by saw her and grinned in amusement.
"Wipe your face, Luwain!"
Suelin snapped. Her hands seemed to be moving, hidden from the room by her body. Luwain's grin was indeed wiped away.
"Tell Nandera she must come here at once, and Ruark! And bring me cut and saw, and scissors to cut my hair properly. Run, woman! Are you Fardarais Mai or Cheyenne Matal?"
The yellow-haired maiden darted away, and Suelin turned back to the room with a satisfied nod, slamming the door. Fael was gaping.
"Grace favors us," Dobrain growled. "She told the Aiel nothing. The woman must be mad. We can decide what to tell them after we tie and gag her."
He moved as if to do it, even pulling a dark green scarf from his coat pocket, but Perrin caught his arm.
"She is Aiel, Dobrain," Berlaine said, "a maiden of the spear. I do not understand the livery."
Surprisingly, it was Berlaine who received a warning glare from Suelin. Perrin exhaled slowly, and he had wanted to protect the white-haired old woman from Dobrain. The Kyrianen looked at him questioningly, raised the hand holding the scarf a little. Apparently he still favored binding and gagging. Perrin stepped between the two and picked up Rand's sword.
"I want to be sure."
Suddenly he realized his steps had put him very close to Berlaine. She glanced at Suelin uneasily and moved closer to him as though seeking protection, but her scent was determined, not uneasy. She smelled like a hunter.
"I don't like leaping to conclusions," he said, walking over to stand beside Fael's chair.
Not quickly, just a man going to stand by his wife.
"This sword isn't really proof of anything."
Fael rose and glided around the table to peer at the board past Loyal's shoulder. Well, closer to his elbow, really. Berlaine glided, too, toward Perrin. She was still chasing fearful looks at Suelin without the slightest fear scent, and her hand came up as if to take his arm. He moved after Fael, trying to appear casual.
"Rand said three Aes Sedai could not harm him if he was watchful."
Fael sailed around the other side of the table back to her chair.
"I understand he never let more than three near him."
Berlaine followed with piteous looks for him, and plainly fearful ones for Suelin.
"I was told only three came here the day he left."
He went after Fael a little faster. She popped out of her chair again, returning to Loyal's side. Loyal had his head in his hands and was moaning, softly for an ogier. Berlaine stalked after Perrin with her already big eyes wide, the very picture of a woman seeking protection. Light she smelled determined. Whirling to face her, Perrin shoved stiffened fingers against her chest hard enough to make her squeak.
"Stop right there!"
Abruptly he realized exactly where his fingers were nestled and snatched them away as if burned. He managed to keep his voice hard, though.
"Stay right there!"
He backed away from her, glaring hard enough to crack a stone wall. He could understand why Fael's jealousy was a cloud filling his nose, but why did she smell even more hurt than before?
"Few men can make me obey," Berlaine laughed softly, "but I think you are one."
Her face and tone, and more importantly her scent, became serious.
"I went searching in the Lord Dragon's apartments because I was afraid. Everyone knew the Aes Sedai had come to escort him to Tarvalin, and I could not understand why they had given up. I myself received no fewer than 10 visits from various sisters advising me on what I should do when he returned to the tower with them. They seemed very certain.
She hesitated, and though she did not look at Fael, Perrin got the impression she was considering whether to say something in front of her. In front of Dobraine as well, but more Fael. The hunter smell returned.
I received the strong impression that I should return to Mayen, and that if I did not, I might well be escorted there.
Sulan muttered under her breath, but Perrin's ears heard clearly.
Ruark is a fool. If she was truly his daughter, he would have no time to do anything else for having to beat her.
10, Dobraine said. I had only one visit. I thought she was disappointed when I made it clear I had sworn fealty to the Lord Dragon. But whether 10 or 1, Kolaver is the key. She knows as well as any that the Lord Dragon means the Sun Throne for Elaine Trakand. He grimaced. Elaine Damodred. She should be. Tarengale should have insisted Morghese marry into Damodred instead of marrying into Trakand himself. She needed him enough to have done it. Well, Elaine Trakand or Elaine Damodred, she has as strong a claim to the throne as any, stronger than Kolaver's by far. Yet I am convinced Kolaver had Maringill and Mylan killed to make her own way to the throne safe. She would never have dared had she thought the Lord Dragon would ever return.
So that is why.
A small, vexed frown creased Berlane's forehead.
I have proof she had a servant put poison in Maringill's wine. She was careless, and I brought 2 good thief-catchers with me. But I did not know why.
She bowed her head slightly, acknowledging Dobraine's admiring look.
She will hang for that, if there is any way to get the Lord Dragon back. If not, I fear we must all look to how we are to stay alive.
Perrin's hand tightened on the boarhide scabbard.
I will get him back, he growled.
Danil and the other 2 Rivers men could not be more than halfway to Cairhien yet, burdened with the wagons. But there were the wolves.
If I have to go alone, I'll get him back.
Not alone, Loyal said, as grimly as stone grinding. Never alone while I am here, Perrin.
Abruptly his ears shifted in embarrassment. He always seemed embarrassed when anyone saw him being brave.
After all, my book will not end very well if Rand is imprisoned in the tower, and I can hardly write of his rescue if I am not there.
You will not go alone, Ogier, Dobraine said. I can have 500 men I trust by tomorrow. What we can do against 6 Aes Sedai I do not know, but I keep my oaths.
Looking at Sulan, he fingered the scarf that he still held.
But how far can we trust the savages?
How far can we trust tree killers?
Sorley demanded in a voice leathery and tough as she herself, striding in without knocking. A grim-smelling Ruark was with her, and Amys, her 2 youthful face cool as any Aes Sedai's in that incongruous frame of white hair, and Nandera, reeking of murderous fury and carrying a bundle of gray and brown and green.
You know, Perrin said incredulously.
Nandera tossed the bundle at Sulan.
Past time you saw your toe as met. Almost 4.5 weeks? An entire month and a half? Even Guy Shine say your pride is too strong.
The 2 women vanished into the bedchamber. A smell of irritation had wafted from Fael as soon as Perrin spoke.
Maiden hand talk, she murmured, too softly for any ear but his to hear.
He gave her a grateful look, but she appeared to be concentrating on the stones board.
Why was she not taking part? She gave good advice, and he would be grateful for any she was willing to offer.
She placed a stone and frowned at Loyal, who was intent on Perrin and the others. Trying not to sigh, Perrin said flatly,
I don't care who trusts who. Ruark, are you willing to send your Aiel against Aes Sedai?
6 of them.
100,000 Aiel would give them pause, though.
The number coming out of his mouth made him blink. 10,000 men was not an inconsiderable army, but those were the numbers Rand had spoken of, and what Perrin had seen of the Aiel camp in the hills made him believe. To his surprise, Ruark smelled hesitant.
"So many are not possible," the clan chief said slowly, and paused before going on. "Runners came this morning. The Shido are moving south from Kinslayer's Dagger in force into the heart of Kyrian. I may have enough to stop them. They do not all seem to be coming. But if I take so many spears out of this land, all that we have done will have to be redone. At the least, the Shido will have looted this city long before we return. Who can say how far they will have gone, into other lands even, and how many carried off claiming they are Gaishan?" A strong odor of contempt came from him at that last, but Perrin understood none of it. What did it matter how much land had to be reconquered, or even how many people died, though that thought came reluctantly, painfully, stacked against Rand, the dragon reborn, being taken prisoner to Tarvalin? Soralea had been studying Perrin. Wise One's eyes often made Perrin feel as Aes Sedai's did, that he had been weighed to the ounce and measured to the inch. Soralea made him feel he had been disassembled like a broken plow, every pin hefted and examined to see whether it should be mended or replaced.
"Tell him everything, Ruark," she said sharply.
Amis laid a hand on Ruark's arm.
"He has the right to know, shade of my heart. He is Randall Thor's near brother."
Her voice was gentle, her smell quite firm. Ruark gave the Wise Ones a hard look and Dobrain a contemptuous one. Finally, he straightened to his full height.
"I can take only maidens and Siswayaman."
By his tone and his smell, he would rather lose an arm than speak those words.
"Too many of the others will not dance the spears with Aes Sedai."
Dobrain's lip curled in contempt.
"How many Kyrianen will fight Aes Sedai?" Perrin asked quietly.
6 Aes Sedai.
"And we have nothing but steel."
How many of the maidens and these sis-whatever could Ruark gather? No matter. There were always the wolves. How many wolves would die? The curl went out of Dobrain's lip.
"I will, Lord Ibarra," he said stiffly. "I and my 500. If there were 60, Aes Sedai."
Even Soralea's cackle was leathery.
"Do not fear the Aes Sedai, tree killer."
Suddenly, shockingly, a tiny flame danced in the air before her. She could channel. She let the flame vanish as they began planning, but it remained in Perrin's thoughts. Small, flickering weakly, somehow it had seemed a declaration of war stronger than trumpets. War to the knife.
"If you cooperate," Galena said conversationally, "life will be more pleasant for you." The girl stared back sullenly and shifted on her stool, a little painfully yet. She was sweating freely, though her coat was off. The tent must be hot. Galena sometimes forgot temperature altogether. Not for the first time she wondered about this Min, or El Mindreda, or whatever her real name was. The first time Galena had seen her, she'd been garbed like a boy, keeping company with Nynaeve Almira and Egwene Alvir, and Elaine Trakand as well, but the other two were tied to Althor. The second time El Mindreda had been the sort of woman Galena hated, frilly and sighing, and as near under the personal protection of Swan Sanchez made no difference. How Elida had ever been fool enough to allow her to leave the tower, Galena could not imagine. What knowledge was in this girl's head? Perhaps Elida would not have her right away. Properly used in the tower, the girl might enable Galena to net Elida like a swallow. For all of Alviarin, Elida had become one of those strong, capable Amerlins who took every rein firmly into their own hands. Caging her would surely weaken Alviarin. Properly used right now. A change in the flows she had been sensing made Galena sit up straight. "I will talk with you again when you have had time for thought, Min. Think carefully on how many tears a man is worth." Once outside, Galena snapped at the stocky warder on guard, Watch her properly this time. Kara Lowe had not been on guard during the incident last night, but there was too much mollycoddling of the Gaidin. If they had to exist at all, they should be treated as soldiers and no more. Ignoring his bow, she glided away from the tent, looking for Gawain. That young man had been withdrawn since Al-Thor was captured, and much too quiet. She was not about to have everything ruined by him trying to avenge his mother. But she saw Gawain sitting his horse on the edge of the camp, talking to a knot of those boys who called themselves the Younglings. They had stopped early of necessity today, and the afternoon sun made long shadows of the tents and wagons beside the road. Rolling plains and low hills surrounded the camp, with only a few scattered thickets in sight, most sparse and small. 33 Aes Sedai with their servants and warders. 9 were green, only 13 red, and the rest white. Alviarin's former Aja made a considerable encampment even without counting Gawain and his soldiers. A number of sisters were standing outside or looking out of their tents, having felt what Galena had. The focus of attention was 7 Aes Sedai, 6 seated on stools around a brass-bound chest, set where it could catch whatever strength remained in the sun. The 7th was Arian. She had not been far from the chest since Al-Thor was put back into it last night. He had been allowed out once they were away from Cairhien, but Galena suspected Arian was going to want him to make the rest of the journey inside that box. The green rounded on her as soon as she came close. Arian was quite beautiful usually, her face a pale, exquisite oval, but now crimson suffused her cheeks, as it had almost constantly since the night before. And her lovely dark eyes were red-rimmed. He did try to break through the shield again, Galena. Wrath mingled with contempt for the man's foolishness, making her voice thick and harsh. He must be punished again. I do want to be the one to punish him. Galena hesitated. Much better would be to punish Min. That would quell Al-Thor. He had certainly raged enough seeing her punished for her outburst last night, which had in turn come from seeing him punished. The entire incident had begun because Al-Thor discovered Min was in the camp after one of the warders carelessly allowed her to walk in the darkness instead of keeping her closely confined in her tent. Who would have thought that Al-Thor, shielded and surrounded, would have gone mad that way? Not just trying to break through the shield, but killing a warder with his bare hands and severely wounding another with the dead man's sword, to such an extent that the second died in the healing. All that in the moments required for the sisters to overcome their shock and bind him with the power. For herself, Galena would have gathered the other red sisters and gentled Al-Thor days ago. Since that was prohibited, she would just as soon have delivered him to the tower unmarked, so long as he was reasonably polite. Even now, efficiency was what she cared for, and what would be efficient would be to bring Min out here and let him hear her wail and weep again, let him know that he was the cause of her pain. But by chance, both the dead warders belonged to Arian. Most of the sisters would feel she had the right, and Galena herself wanted the doll-like Gleaner Green to rid herself of her rage as soon as possible. Much better to travel the rest of the way, able to admire that porcelain face unruffled. Galena nodded.
Rand blinked when light suddenly flooded into the chest. He could not help flinching, too. He knew it was coming. Luce Theron fell silent and still. Rand held the void by a fingernail, yet he was all too aware of cramped muscles groaning as he was pulled upright. He clamped his teeth shut and tried not to squint against what seemed the brightness of noon. The air seemed wonderfully fresh. His sodden shirt clung to him, dripping with sweat. No cords held him, but he could not have moved a step for his life. If not held up with the power, he would have fallen over. Until he saw how low the sun sat, he had no idea how long he had been in there with his head between his knees, in a puddle of his own sweat. The sun got only a notice, though. Involuntarily, his eyes went to Arion, even before she placed herself squarely in front of him. The short, slender woman peered up at him, dark eyes full of fury, and he almost flinched again. Unlike last night, she said nothing, only began. The first unseen blow struck him across the shoulders, the second, the chest, third, the backs of his thighs. The void shattered. Air. Only air. It sounded softer that way. Each blow felt like a whip, though, wielded by an arm stronger than any man's. Before she began, bruised welts crisscrossed him from shoulders to knees. He had been aware of them, not so dimly as he could have wished. Even inside the void, he had wanted to weep. After the void went, he wanted to howl. Instead, he clenched his jaws. Sometimes a grunt escaped through his teeth, and when one did, Arian's efforts redoubled as if she wanted more. He refused to give it. He could not stop a shudder at each stroke of that invisible lash, but no more than that would he give her. He fixed his eyes on hers, refused to look away, to blink.
"I killed my Elena,"
Luz Theron moaned every time a blow landed. Rand had his own litany, pain flailing his chest. "This comes of trusting Aes Sedai." Fire striping his back. "Never again. Not an inch, not a hair." Like a razor's slash. "This comes of trusting Aes Sedai." They thought they could break him. They thought they could make him crawl to Elida. He made himself do the hardest thing he had ever done in his life. He smiled. Certainly it touched nothing but his lips, yet he looked Arian in the eye, and he smiled. Her eyes widened, and she hissed. The scourges began to come from everywhere at once. The world was pain and fire. He could not see, only feel. Agony and inferno. For some reason he was aware of his hands trembling uncontrollably in their invisible bonds, but he concentrated on holding his teeth shut. "This comes of... won't cry out. I will not cry out. Never again. Not an in... not an inch. Not a hair. Never again. I will not. Never a... never, never, never." First there was a perception of breathing. Air gulped hungrily through his nostrils. He throbbed, he was a pulsing flame, but the beating had stopped. It almost came as a shock, realizing that. The end of something that part of him had been convinced would never end. He tasted blood and realized that his jaws hurt almost as much as the rest of him. Good. He had not cried out. The muscles of his face were locked in a knotted cramp. It would take effort to open his mouth, even if he wanted to. Sight was the last thing to return, and when it did, he wondered whether pain was making him hallucinate. Among the Aes Sedai stood a group of wise ones, shifting their shawls and staring at the Aes Sedai with all the arrogance they could muster. When he decided they were real, unless he was fantasizing Galena talking to one of his fancies, his first thought was rescue. Somehow the wise ones had... it was impossible, but somehow they would... Then he recognized the woman speaking with Galena. Sevana strolled toward him, a smile on that plump, greedy mouth. Those pale green eyes peered up at him from that beautiful face framed by hair like spun gold. Rand would as soon have looked into the face of a rabid wolf. There was something odd in the way she stood, leaning forward slightly, shoulders back. She was watching his eyes. Abruptly, as much as he hurt, he wanted to laugh. He would have, if he could have been sure what sound would emerge if he opened his mouth. Here he was, a prisoner, beaten within an inch of his life, welts burning, sweat stinging, and a woman who hated him, he was sure, who probably blamed him for the death of her lover, was trying to see whether he would look down the front of her blouse. Slowly she ran a fingernail across his throat, in fact, as far around his neck as she could reach, as though imagining cutting off his head. Fitting, considering Culloden's fate. "I have seen him,"
she said with a satisfied sigh and a small shiver of pleasure. You have kept your part of the bargain, and I have kept mine. The Aes Sedai doubled him again then, shoved him back down into the chest with his head between his knees, crouching in that thin puddle of sweat. The lid closed, and darkness enclosed him. Only then did he work his jaws until his mouth could open and let out a long, shuddering breath. He had not been sure whether he might not whimper even now. Light, but he was on fire. What was Savannah doing here? What bargain? No. All very well to know there was some bargain between the tower and the Shido, but worrying about it was for later. Now was for Min. He had to get free. They had hurt her. That thought was so grim it almost dulled the pain. Almost. Assuming the void again was a labor of wading through a swamp of agony, but at last he was surrounded by emptiness, reaching out towards Sidene. Only to find Luz Theron there as soon as he was, like two sets of hands fumbling to grasp something only one could hold.
"Burn you," Rand growled in his head. "Burn you, if you'd only work with me, just once instead of against me. You work with me," Luz Theron snapped back.
Rand nearly lost the void in shock. There could be no mistake this time. Luz Theron had heard him and answered.
"We could work together, Luz Theron."
He did not want to work with the man. He wanted him out of his head. But there was Min, and how many days yet to Tarvalin? Somehow he was sure if they got him that far, there would be no more chances. Ever. An uncertain, apprehensive laugh answered him.
Then, "Together."
Another laugh, and this mad as a loon.
"Together, whoever you are."
And voice and presence vanished. Rand shivered. Kneeling there, adding more sweat to the puddle his head rested in, he shivered. Slowly he reached for Sidene again, and came against the shield, of course. The thing he had been seeking in any case. Slowly, ever so gently, he felt his way along it, to where a hard plane suddenly turned to six soft points.
"Soft," Luz Theron said, panting. "Because they are there, sustaining the buffer. Hard when they're not. Nothing to be done when they are soft, but I can unravel the web if they knot it. With time."
He paused so long, Rand thought he was gone again. Then he whispered,
"Are you real?"
And then he really was gone. Gingerly, Rand felt along the shield to the soft points. To six Aes Sedai. With time? If they tied it, which they had not so far in, what was it, 6 days, seven, eight? No matter. He could not afford to wait too long. Every day was one closer to Tarvalin. Tomorrow he would try to break through the barrier again. It had been like beating his hands against stone, but he had beaten with all his strength. Tomorrow, when Arian flogged him, he was sure it would be her, he would smile at her again, and when the pain built, he would let the screams come. The next day he would not more than brush the shield, maybe hard enough to let them feel it, but only that, and not again after, whether they punished him or not. Maybe he would beg for water. They would give him some at dawn, but he was thirsty again. Even if they let him drink more than once a day, begging would fit. If he was still in the box then, he might plead to be let out, too. He thought he would be. Small chance of them allowing him out for long, until they were sure he had learned his lesson. Cramped muscles twitched at the thought of two or three more days stuffed in here. There was no room to move anything, but his body tried. 2 or 3 days, and they would be sure he was broken. He would look fearful and avoid meeting anyone's gaze.
a wretch they could safely let out of the chest. More importantly, a wretch they did not need to guard so closely. And then, perhaps, they would decide they did not need six to hold the shield, or that they could tie it off, or something. He needed some crack. Something. It was a desperate thought, but he realized that he was laughing, and he could not stop. He could not stop feeling at the barrier, either. A blind man sliding his fingers desperately across a piece of smooth glass.
Galena frowned after the departing Aiel women until they topped a rise and vanished down the other side. Every one of those women except Savannah herself had been able to channel, several quite strongly. No doubt Savannah had thought herself safer surrounded by a dozen or so wilders. Amusing thought. These savages were an untrusting lot. In a few days she would make use of them again, in the second part of Savannah's bargain. The regrettable death of Gawain Trakand and the better part of his younglings. Returning to the heart of the camp, she found Arion still standing over the chest containing Althor. "He do be weeping, Galena," she said fiercely. "Can you hear him? He do be..." Suddenly tears were sliding down Arion's face. She simply stood there sobbing quietly, her hands fists clutching her skirts. "Come to my tent," Galena said soothingly. "I have some nice blueberry tea, and I will put a cool, damp cloth on your brow." Arion smiled through her tears. "Thank you, Galena, but I cannot. Rashan and Bartol will be waiting for me. They do suffer worse than I fear. They do not only feel my suffering, but do suffer because they know I do. I must comfort them." One grateful squeeze of Galena's hand, and she glided away. Galena frowned at the chest. Althor did seem to be weeping. Either that or he was laughing, and she very much doubted that. She looked after Arion, just disappearing into her warder's tent. Althor would weep. They had at least 2 weeks more to Tar Valon and Elida's planned triumphal entry. Yes, at least 20 days more. From now on, whether Arion wished to do it or not, he was to be punished each day, at dawn and at sunset. When she brought him into the White Tower, he would kiss Elida's ring, speak when spoken to, and kneel in the corner when he was not wanted. Eyes tight, she went to drink her blueberry tea by herself. As they entered the largish stand of trees, Savannah turned to the others, thinking how remarkable it was that she should think of the trees so casually. Before crossing the dragon wall, she had never seen so many trees. "Did you all see the means they used to hold him?" she asked, making it sound as if she had said, "also," instead of "all." Therava looked at the others, who nodded. "We can weave all they have done," Therava said. Nodding, Savannah fingered the small stone cube with its intricate carvings in her pouch. The strange wetlander who had given it to her had said she should use it now, when Althor was captive. Until she had actually looked on him, she had intended to. Now she decided to throw the cube away. She was the widow of a chief who had been to Roydian, and of a man who had been called chief without making that visit. Now she was going to be the wife of the Karakarn himself. Every spear of the Aiel would be grounded to her. Her finger still retained the feel of Althor's neck, where she had traced the line of the collar she would put on him. "It is time, Dessein," she said. Of course, Dessein blinked in surprise, and then she had time only to scream before the others began their work. Dessein had contented herself with grumbling about Savannah's position. Savannah had put her time to better use. Except for Dessein, every woman here was solidly behind her, and more besides. Savannah watched very closely what the other wise ones did. The one power fascinated her, all those things done so miraculously, so effortlessly. And it was very important that it would be seen that what was done to Dessein could only have been done with the power. She thought it quite astounding that a human body could be taken apart with so little blood.